or not come?
He might not.
Because the only text that came in was from Walgreens, so unless he's working there, I didn't get it. So, call to order.
Okay. I have it starting.
Okay. Do I do it, Emma?
Boyd Frederick.
Here.
David Hallman.
Present.
Andy Berg.
Here.
Aaron Decker.
Here.
John Frankel.
Here.
John Poole.
Here.
Michael Skaletsky is excused. Alexandra Hara.
Here.
Emma Heller Kavner.
Here.
Okay. Citizen comments. And not even your husband came this time.
He'll be here later.
Okay. Chairperson comments. On none. Happy to take December off. I think we've all been through enough. And then the speakers started in January. I want to know what the committee would like to do is to help the speakers out, because a lot of them will need to be in Madison on Monday nights. Are we willing to move around the meetings to make it more convenient for them?
So that it's Tuesday. You said Monday night.
I mean, Tuesday night. I'm sorry. Tuesday night, they will be in session on Tuesday.
I am fine with that, personally.
Because I know they've got other obligations, unless they want to do it by speakerphone.
Yeah.
So anybody else have an issue with, if so we can talk to them, do it more at their convenience.
Do you guys have nights of the week that you can't make it, like because you got practice or?
Oh no,
Wednesday.
Yeah.
So not Wednesdays.
Okay. Well, then you've got session on Wednesday, so that would be out automatically.
You gotta let me know way ahead of time because I'm already taking tonight these nights off.
No, I will more than let you know.
I'll make it work.
Because they had the caucus this week, and we have two people in leadership still: our Representative Kirkman and Representative Barker. So we'll have probably a good heads up on what the calendar is going to look like.
So what day are we switching them from Tuesday to
what
Monday?
I'm going
to
do is they're going to be in Madison. And whatever they're, I'm not going, what I'm going to try to do is make our meetings
contingent upon
their
availability.
Schedule.
Okay.
Because unless we have something that needs to come up before us, then we can do a much shorter meeting before the regular meeting, but with speakers, we'll move it around for them. Okay. I think that's the best thing to do. Any supervisor comments?
So, just to verify, no December meeting.
No December meeting. However, if some people meet at a bar, that's their choice. Because you know. We're not eating.
You guys, sorry.
Because the same night we would meet is the county board Christmas party.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so. I have no communications. Do you have any communications at all?
No.
Okay. Approval of the October 18th minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? All in favor of the minutes, state by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. I have heard a lot of things over the last couple of months when I listen to the radio, when I hear out in the public, is that we have all become too darn partisan. And they even say it's not going on the local level. Now I know a lot, and the one thing I've noticed is I have met and know the supervisors from both parties. And the Republicans have a good relationship with people more to their political ilk, and the Democrats do the same. So what we're going to start doing is talk to the people of the other party, because there seems to be a little bit of a gap there. So what we are going to do, and I have put down individuals I think could work well with the other people, because that way we can start up and start talking about what our issues are on a non-partisan level. Because everything could come from this committee should be on a non-partisan level. I mean, I'm glad to say the gentleman coming tonight who is a Republican senator is actually a very good friend of mine and has been for a long time. You know, and we actually worked on non-partisan elections together. I want us to continue that. because we're going to do things when it comes to the budget, a lot of things, because there could be cuts to us, which means cuts for Madison means raising taxes on the local level, and none of us want to do that.
Or it means cuts in spending, too.
Agreed. Because a lot of these things are set up for us ahead of time. So, what I've done is paired up some people. Is Aaron, Supervisor Decker, I think, because of your experience working with Peter Barca, because you actually know the issues as well as anybody does. Supervisor Poole with Todd Onstead. With Senator Wirch, Supervisor Skolinski. Because the way those two talk back and forth, I think both of them could use the back and forth that they did that last meeting. With Supervisor with Representative Kirkman, John Franco, with Senator Wongarn, Andy, and with Representative August, David.
How about our other state senator?
He is so tiny in this community. I debated about what should I work with Senator Nass or not, and I was debating back and forth on that today. Because he just has...
He has the same area as Tyler does.
Yeah.
In Kenosha County.
But Tyler has been very, very receptive to meeting with us. That's why I thought of him. If so, then I'll work with Senator Nass. I have no... Now I just realized how long I've known Senator Nass. Because I think that way it would be the best thing. And it'll actually show that the people in this community were above partisanship and working together for the best for Kenosha County. So, any thoughts on what I said?
Sounds like a good idea. We'll try it out.
Why not?
What do you mean working with them? What do you mean? I don't understand.
What we're going to be doing is, especially when the budget comes out, we'll have a very good idea of what cuts are going to be made to Kenosha County through WCA, and we'll be able to put up resolutions and then tell them this is why we want this to happen. Because cuts, lakefront zoning is something that's going to affect you out by you. And that's something that was done just for Dane County. However, if that goes statewide in this budget, which it might, that'll cause some issues out in the western Kenosha County at the lakefronts. Different things like that. It's got to come out of this committee before we talk to the legislator about it. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
We approve it here first.
Oh, okay.
Nothing goes out of here that's partisan one way or another. This is all for what we agree on in committee to do. And then we talk to them. It's basically an expansion of the ambassador program that was done by the counties association. But now each of us are working with an individual on it.
When you say talk to them, do you mean what? Assuming it passes the committee, we talk to them in regard to whether they agree with it or what do they think about it?
The position County is, there's, say for example, when it comes to the budget, and if they start cutting our funding, we can point out, this is how much you received, last year. We've had this frozen now. We've had more, the state is asking more from us, and we've held the money at $158 million over the last few years, and now you're cutting this again. You're asking us to do more with less.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we're having to find places to cut. Why don't you ease up on us when it comes to mandates you're asking us to do?
Okay, gotcha.
Because if the less mandates, the less we have to deal with. That just makes sense.
Yeah.
And I've been going up there for years. If there's any questions or other information, I'll be glad to come up, help everyone individually so we can be prepared.
So you're saying it's going to come down, WCA is going to let us know first. Is that correct?
Yes, because the 8th and 9th of February is going to be their legislative exchange, which comes out right before the budget. Right from there, we'll have an idea of what they're looking at. Then we'll have a better idea once the budget comes out.
Okay.
If that makes...
Yeah, okay.
Does WCA get kind of a heads up, or they, what's coming out, or they think they know what's going to come out,
what
and then as
is,
soon as it comes out, they kind of scramble and look and find out and send
like
out information?
People like Speaker Voss will be speaking at this symposium.
Okay.
So they will be telling the audience what they foresee.
Okay. But it's not for sure. They don't know for sure.
They will know until...
Okay.
I don't think they've announced when the budget's going to be released. It'll last... 2 years ago, it was right around Valentine's Day.
Okay. So at this... Speaker Voss is kind of going to give them ideas of what he's thinking.
There's a whole slew of speakers, including department heads
okay.
and everything else. Probably one of the bigger things we'll be dealing with is transportation and roads. I don't think anyone has an idea how that's going to pan out. So, is everyone good with this? Or? Okay. We'll move on to the resolution then. So, Jack, do you want to sort of introduce it? Since it was your idea.
I suppose. It's
it
been
was
a
your
while.
Idea.
But it was, if you look at the August 16th. when we were discussing, it kind of got brought up, it would have been, let's see, April, May. What was our first meeting? May, probably?
Probably.
And we had those ideas of what different changes we wanted to the county board rules of procedure, and different people came up with different ideas. This was a thought that I had for example, this meeting here, if you have an item on the agenda the night of the meeting, or basically after it's agendaed, the Friday agenda comes out for the county board meeting, that the resolution or ordinance needs to get voted on before it's actually on the county board agenda. So that way it's not foreseen as a foregone conclusion. So we actually can possibly table it or something like that. Unless, obviously, it is time sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
That was my thought.
Well, first of all, Mr. Carbone, does that do anything when it comes to the rules that this would not fit into what we're trying to do?
Well, I mean, this would be, right now I believe the rules are silent. This would amend the rules to indicate that would be the procedure. I can tell you that I believe that, and I don't know that it's in our standing rules, it may just be in Robert's rules, although I know that it's certainly part of our standing agenda language. Anything can be taken off of the agenda. So, for example, if in Supervisor Decker's example, an item was considered tonight and tabled, the fact that occurred wouldn't preclude the county board meeting from indicating, you know, it's been tabled, it hasn't been approved yet.
Because the only place where I'd see this, because we would get at the packets by most, the only meeting this would really conflict with is Public Works.
Oh, and tonight's.
Pardon?
And tonight's. Today's,
yeah,
right now.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the thoughts was, because there are times that changes get made too at the committee level, and then they're scrambling to get the changes to the county board members. You don't have time to digest it and understand what maybe the changes were or things like that.
Is there any discussion on this at all?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There are rare instances, I think, where there isn't time to consider something. I mean, it doesn't happen all that often. Language-wise, most of this just seems just like common practice. Like, this is just superfluous wording for something that, for the most part, we already do. If people don't deem it necessary, then, you know, we don't take it up. I mean, that's, you know, it's a motion to suspend rules for immediate consideration, you know, has... I mean, that's
isn't,
why that
isn't
is.
Isn't that the reason why we? It's required to get it in by Friday, so we do have time to consider it?
Well, I don't know that we have anything written.
Even for Monday, if you get it Friday, you have over the weekend to look at it?
Right, but I don't know that we have anything written hard and fast, necessarily, that says it has to be Friday, per se.
Yeah. But isn't that when we normally get it, or is that just...
It is. It was a much bigger problem when we were issuing paper packets because folks on the West End
didn't
necessarily...
Right, because you get the mail in time.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah. But now with everything being electronic, I mean, you know, if it's, stuff is supposed to be in Friday at 9, and somebody comes in at 9:30 with something, I mean, that's a...
Mm-hmm.
It's another email, so I'm kind of like...
Well, one thing I can think of recently was the Public Works meeting where they considered the smoking changes, and they made a few changes there, and that was on Monday night, and then I guess we didn't discuss it that Tuesday, though. That was included in the budget then, I think.
Right.
So, but if it had been included, you know, in something that was on Tuesday night, would we been running afoul of, like, what is it, the 48-hour notice to constituents, you know, about what's going to be on the agenda, or?
I don't believe so. I don't believe that amendments in a committee run the foul of the notice of committee.
That's my question.
Okay. Because, yeah, I mean, if a meeting, because I'm on Public Works and Facilities, we meet Monday night, and that next night is the county board meeting. That doesn't give people a lot of time. If you don't get to your emails that quickly, you're going to be potentially voting on something you haven't even read. But I don't know, it's just, should there be a certain length of time, several days, before you amend something prior to it being voted on at a county board meeting? Just throwing that out as a topic of conversation, and more so than an actual amendment. But
the one thing this does is give the chair discretion, yeah, if it's time sensitive or not. Because there are some things with Public Works when it comes to grants are time sensitive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So could that be part of the potential amendment? Didn't you say?
No, it is in there already.
It gives the chair discretion.
Excluding things that are time sensitive.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah.
It says,
read it again, would you?
No item shall be scheduled for inclusion on the agenda for a regular meeting of the county board unless it has already been considered by the appropriate committee or committees, unless the county board chair, in consultation with the item's submitter, determines that the matter is of a time-sensitive nature requiring the board's attention.
Okay, the already considered, what does that mean time-wise? I mean, is it...
That means it has to be passed at the committee level before it goes on the county board agenda, unless it's time sensitive.
Right, because if finance had to meet tonight,
right,
but change something, that's time sensitive, and that's something we'd be able to take up tonight.
I'm still confused by the wording of this. I mean, so much of this requires on whoever is chairing that committee to be a good, decent committee chair in terms of giving their report on the floor, in terms of saying, this is what happened in committee that probably you're not aware of. It's contingent upon supervisors doing their due diligence. There's a reason why I pushed so hard for all of our content to be made available online anywhere in the world 24/7, that you can hear the audio from this committee and all of the others, as well as all the documentation that goes with it. It's really about people simply doing the work. And so I'm a little afraid that now we have to have wording to micromanage ourselves when, for the most part, we've been pretty good about dealing with whatever issues this might address. Have there been some imperfections? Yeah, because people haven't thought through the procedure of what it is that they have to do, but I don't see how that makes wording necessary.
What's easier, removing from the board agenda or adding to?
Removing from is infinitely easier. Adding to requires new notice. Removing from is not.
That's almost kind of where I'd stand on that.
But you wouldn't add it last minute. You'd know it. There would be no adding it.
Right, unless it was time sensitive.
Well, but it'd have to be agenda 24 hours anyway.
We have nothing in the bylaws right now that says anything about this.
Correct.
But procedurally, we've been smart enough to generally deal with it and make it work.
No, we haven't.
Hold on.
That's why I asked for this to be done.
Supervisor Poole, go ahead.
Well, I've heard Supervisor Wambolt say before that slow government is better. And I admit, you know, sometimes I felt like it was rushed, you know, from, you know, once the committee did it, you know, try and get it to the county board without even, you know, if you've been on vacation for that weekend or something, you know, then maybe you didn't have time to look at it, you know, yet. So
no,
maybe we should, you know, slow things down just a little bit there.
The example I'm thinking of is both Supervisor Sklinski and I were gone Memorial Day weekend, and I downloaded it where I was at, and he didn't have the opportunity to download the agenda because, sorry, when you're just sitting there fishing, you might as well read something. So
how do we determine whether someone has had enough time to committee? So we're just saying as long as it's brought up before we, but obviously it would be brought up before we vote on it anyway, right? Isn't that a point of fact? I mean, nothing's going to go to the floor unless we talk about it first or it passes, right?
Well, what I could do in this position is put something on the agenda tonight, put it and say we're voting on it, even though...
Like right now?
Right.
Just
I mean,
it would
be
right
on the agenda tonight, and we hadn't even voted on it.
That's what
I think Supervisor Decker's point is.
I don't like that idea.
You don't like... Doing that?
Well, that would
happens a lot.
And that's what we're talking
I'll
about.
I'll tell you, it happened on Wednesday. Public Works, PDEC, we had a meeting at 6 o'clock out at the county center, ran here after the meeting, and voted on it at 7 o'clock.
Without having the opportunity to think about it or look at it.
And we could have made changes to it, and you guys would have never had time to digest it or anything.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have gotten a new there's no way you guys would have gotten a new copy of it to even read it, maybe 5 minutes beforehand.
How often does this happen?
Hold on.
Go ahead.
That sounds like the fault of committee staff. I'll just be honest. I chaired Human Services, and, you know, mysteriously someone thought it was a good idea to do that. I turned to John Jensen, and I said, no. I mean, that's what I mean, was like, it's all players being involved, you know, pay attention to what's happening. I was surprised. I want to say it happened maybe two or three times, and I went, enough, because I thought they would have got it after the first or second time.
What I would like to is...
Well, Public Works, the PDEC meeting, it was time sensitive because we were at the end of our session, and we had to do it by then or re-notice it, because Public Works, or PDEC, it's two notices, it's a public hearing. They said, you know, we have to do you have to notice it twice in the paper, so that's at least 2 weeks out. And then the time got changed of our county board meeting from 7:30 to 7, and things like that. And it was time sensitive. So that was time sensitive because otherwise we would have had to restart
so
the whole process.
To vote on it.
Right. If we would have had to restart the whole process.
Who's the chair?
Me.
Oh. I'm gonna get some water.
Do we want to continue discussion? That's the only thing I want to do is make sure we give Senator Weingarten enough time. Because he's getting flashbacks when he was on the county board.
He's going to start shaking.
just out of the committee. Because actually, I think we're getting somewhere with this.
Yeah.
Yes?
I just think it's important that you have that time to like actually look at it and be able to process it afterwards. Because while you're reading it and you're reading it there, you understand what it means. But like for people that... don't exactly understand that and they're looking at the wording, maybe you look back at it and you're like, well, this wording is a little confusing or something like that. So like having that time to look back at it would be a little nice so that you'd be able to make sure that everything's the right way you want it.
So what's the pleasure of the committee? You want to continue this, vote on it, or
I'm for it.
Well, then if you're for it, make a motion.
I move we accept the ordinance change.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion on it?
I just want to say one thing. I think, you know, if an amendment or something like that is going to be made on the same day that the meeting is, like that suggestion you just came up with, I frankly I have a problem with that. I don't think that's enough time to to consider the motion or the amendment, whatever it might be, short of being time sensitive. I would agree with that. But I do like the idea of having a little time, at least 24 hours, you know. But if it doesn't work out that way, an amendment is brought up on something, a resolution or an ordinance in committee, and this change is made that night, and then we're voting on it that night, I frankly have a little bit of a problem with that. I don't think it's enough time to consider.
Well, what if we adjusted it a little bit and said, if there are amendments, it's then pushed on to the next board meeting?
The problem with that is you don't know if there's going to be amendments, so you wouldn't put it on the agenda anyway.
Right, but then at that point, we can pull it off if there's those amendments.
Or if there's some language saying, and that's not a bad idea, or some language saying that if you're going to do it that way.
Go ahead, David.
Go ahead.
There is such a thing that exists called a substitute amendment. Both of the gentlemen behind me on this wall can testify to the fact that those exist. When those are introduced, they can, in many cases, radically alter the entirety of what is in front of your eyes. this is why I said before, it's, you know, the person chairing that committee has really got to do his or her due diligence in explaining when these things change from committee to the county board floor. Make sure that staff understands. I mean, that's a team coordinated effort. You know, it language like this, if you do those things, really is unnecessary. Thank you.
I still go back to what Wambold said, where slow government is better. We don't need to shove things through in a hurry.
Well, let's take this as this is. I do want to add one thing about this. This is a friendly amendment. A first reading can be allowed, but not a second reading. Like if they did a first reading for something that came to us, that's okay.
Oh yeah, I'm talking taking it up for debate.
Right.
I thought that was implied, or is that? Mr. Cardinal, is that implied?
That's not what it says.
Okay.
Is that what it says? That's why I said.
Okay.
But they can do the first reading on it. Do you consider that a friendly amendment to it?
Yes.
I'll make the motion. Do you consider that a friendly amendment to?
Okay. So meaning it implied that we would have more time if it's only a first
reading. Right, it's a first reading.
Right.
So it'd be read the first time, nothing voted on. You have 2 weeks to.
So then it's a
moot
issue. Okay.
Look into it.
I mean, that's fine.
So.
Mr. Cardamone, can you make that change? So what would that friendly amendment, how would that wording changed the.
Sure, you can work that right out.
That's
what. we all understand it. So if he doesn't come up with the exact wording tonight, that's fine.
Because it's not going to the county board floor tonight.
We got county board in
it? Yeah.
By the way, you didn't think I figured that out, but I didn't just that. You didn't notice that, did you?
Yeah, oh, I did.
So, do you want to take a vote on it then?
Oh, with the revision amendment?
With added on about the first reading.
Okay.
Voting on this.
Okay.
I'll go around. Supervisor Burke?
Aye.
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 Supervisor Franco?
Aye.
Supervisor Allen?
Aye.
Aye. So we'll go. Oh, sorry.
You forgot
the
these ladies over here.
Aye.
My apologies. So.
And influence their vote.
Thank you.
Okay. And now introducing our speaker for this evening, Senator Wongard, who I mentioned before, was actually, before he was in the state senate, he was just a lowly county supervisor like the rest of us, up in Racine. So, and now he has insight to what's going on that we don't.
I know everything, yeah.
Youth and governance, good job.
What
school you guys go to?
I go to Wastosha Central in Hattie.
I go to Harborside. Awesome. Well, good evening, everybody.
Good evening, sir.
So you and I are going to be connected, right?
Correct.
By the way, he works in corrections. Where do you come from?
That's good. We'll have a good dialogue.
See, I actually just didn't do it as a dartboard.
Boyd actually thought this through.
Oh, wow, thank you.
Before you put that sweater on.
Well, good evening, everybody. I
By the way, can we censure Mr. Berg for that comment?
I didn't hear anything.
I heard nothing either. Glad to be here tonight to chat with you guys. I think that there's a lot of stuff that has happened in the last session. I mean, I'm not sure where you want me to go tonight.
We've had Senator Worthen so far. We've had the gentleman from WCA come and talk to us. We had the gentleman from Just Fix that talked to us when it came to roads. And I know you just had the caucus, what, yesterday?
Last week.
Oh, for the Ocean?
Yeah. Yeah, the assembly had theirs yesterday.
Okay.
Or no, are they having theirs today?
Yes.
Was it yesterday they had theirs?
Yeah, I think it was yesterday.
They actually delayed, didn't they?
Well, I thought I got the email yesterday.
Well, that's right, Sanders, but I don't think the minority party did theirs yet. That's
Representative Barco, as of this afternoon, was elected.
Good, okay, good. That's good. That's actually a good thing. You know, let's start out with that. I did serve on the county board for 8 years. I was elected in 2002 to the Racine County Board. I think I'm one of the only senators in the Senate caucus that's ever served on a county board.
You and Bob?
Yeah, I mean from our side, from the Republican side. I think Bob was the only one on the other side too. Mm-hmm. You know, so, and it's interesting because you get to know a little bit more about, and you have a better feeling of just pushing unfunded mandates. And this was always one of the things that we always had a good dialogue. And I served on finance for the years that I was there, so we would get some pretty good dialogues because, you know, you got to come up with the money oftentimes for some of the things that were pushed out of the counties, because we all know that county government is just an extension of the state government. So all that being said, there are some things that come out. We try to, when I look at legislation that I'm going to propose that is something where there's going to be an additional cost to it, I always look at a funding source, so we have some funding so that it doesn't all of a sudden end up on the shoulders of the county taxpayer or on the municipal taxpayer. And a lot of times, you know, we as legislators, you know, think that we're doing something really good for everybody until we realize that we didn't fund it or the funding source didn't come through all the way. So that's really important that we have an understanding of that. We in the last session, just a couple of things that we did. We dealt with prevailing wage, which helps local governments have more flexibility. So now the rates match the federal rates. Broadband expansion. Is Kenosha County involved in a, did we get a grant?
We've actually we're ahead of the state in doing that.
Did we realize a grant out of the money that was just freed up?
I don't know about that. But I know we were looking to do broadband expansion back in 2010.
All right, then I need to look at that because there's $1.5 million annually that's going to be increased, and they're looking at $500,000 potential more dollars each year for that grant process because there's dollars that are in that broadband, what you call it, cost center, that they were going to spread out. And our thought was, what are we waiting for? We need to get this done now so we can have the economic impact that's going to give us for the county. So I will check on that to see what that status is for those grants. Incremental financing, we worked on that to allow local governments to create multi-jurisdictional tax increment districts, because there were some issues with ones that were right on borderlines, and then they're trying to figure out what are we going to do, how do we do this, because the law did not allow it. Well, we kind of switched that around and adjusted that. Let's see, Vital Records Act, which vital records can now, the local register of deeds, you can go around the state and get it without having your constituents deal with, you know, having to drive there or do those types of things. Local government bodies can now post online notices to meet the open records laws instead of posting it on a bulletin board, so we kind of came into the 21st century with that.
Do we still have to do newspapers? Are you going to change that?
Actually, we're looking at doing something where you'd be able to post in the newspaper that there's going to be a meeting, but you want to have just kind of like bullets as to what it's going to be, and if they need anything additional, then they can go to a website or something. So we're looking at bringing that down.
Save the column inches.
So it's going to save dollars. So without just cutting them out totally, I think it's still a good place to get information across to people. But let's face it, when you look at that notice and you open it up, you need to have, you know, a 20-power magnifying glass to read it half the time. So basically we're spending thousands of dollars on printing that really nobody reads that half the time anyway, because you can't read it. So that's a huge issue too. So we are working on that and changing that up. Notifications between certain governmental bodies may now be shared via email communications, and instead of having to do it you know, the old way we had to. Changing election laws, we enabled online voter registration, which I think was a good idea. Digital poll books, standardized absentee ballots, which helps the local clerks. So we worked with clerks around the state to kind of streamline those issues. Coming up in this session, for the purposes of discussion here, if you guys want to chat about it, I think you hit the nail on the head. I think our first and our major issue that we're going to be dealing with is going to be transportation issues. We know that this is going to be a challenge. Governor Walker has unveiled his initial proposal for transportation, in which he's put a large commitment on fixing local funding for local roads. He's added $65 million in new funding for local transportation aides. That's about a 7% increase. It's the largest since 2000, and it breaks down kind of like this. $46 million increase over 2 years in general transportation aid, which is an 8% increase for counties, 4.7% increase for municipalities. $14 million increase in local road improvement programs. That's a 25% increase. And a $5 million increase for local bridge improvements for the Bridge Improvement Fund. This is probably going to change from what he's proposing. I can probably guarantee you that it will. But that being said, what we're waiting on is we're waiting on an audit. And actually, it's a twofold audit. An audit with the dollars and how the dollars work, and then an audit for efficiencies and actually, you know, how they operate as a government body. So that should be coming up sometime between actually now and the middle of December. We're hoping to have it by the 1st of December, but you never know. This is really detailed. We're talking about, you know, billions of dollars, you know, of dollars in this thing. So it's not real easy to look at everything and get it done like that. So they will be in depth. And I'm not thinking we're going to find a lot of fraud, because this is fairly transparent. It's just that it's so huge, and that's probably the biggest part of this whole issue with transportation. So I think we're going to find some efficiencies, but I can guess that whatever those efficiencies are and whatever little pots of gold that have been tucked away by different units of DOT for their rainy day fund, kind of like we found with the UW system with about $1.4 billion, that was in all these little different, you know, pockets. I don't think it's going to be that much. So we're going to have to look at other ways that we can identify revenue sources. And as far as I'm concerned, everything's on the table. We need to have a good, healthy discussion about it. I have been chatting with my colleagues and my colleagues across the aisle. And I don't think anybody really knows where we're going to go with this at this point until we finally see the audit, I think. So that's going to be a huge thing that's going to help us get a little bit of direction. But I mean, like I said, you know, there's not one thing that will solve this problem. I mean, if they raise gas taxes, as an example, that's not going to solve our deficiencies unless you raised it, you know, like this enormous amount. And then it's not going to be something that's going to be sustaining, because it's going to have issues, I'm sure. So all the other things, like I said, are on the table. The convenience lanes. Just came back from Minnesota, and if you want to drive in the fast lane, you're the only one in the car, you can do that. You got the MIN pass, and you get in that lane, and it changes the amount that it's going to cost you to drive in that lane between certain hours of the day when it's really busy. If you want to drive in that lane, maybe it's $1.75 for 8 miles, you know, that you're going to be driving in that lane. If you have multiple people in the car, you can drive in that lane without being charged. But if you're like one person that's in a big hurry, when you get there, it's going to cost you to be able to do that. And they raise a ton of money that way. So that's just one idea, one thought. So we're going to be looking closely at that. This is huge, is the property tax assessment. And there's no easy answer for this ghost store issue, or dark stores that we've been talking about, and how they've been looking to adjust the assessed values on some of these stores, like the big box stores that are like, and I don't want to give a specific name, because it could be any one of them, they're all going to try to get their tax liability reduced. What that current store is that's in operation does is they want to compare their square footage and maybe even kind of the area that they're in, because it's compared to something which is in a relatively close distance, but it may be a store that's out of business, and it's just an empty shell. So that building is at $2 million, and they want their $40 million to be dropped down so it's closer to the $2 million. You know, that's, obviously those numbers are off, but just to use that as a comparison. So this is a huge issue, I think, for the cities. It's a huge issue for county government, schools, because this is what's going to affect those dollars in revenue coming in. So we had the Council of Governments this past weekend, Saturday, which I always love to attend because you get a good cross-section of the entire county. I sat next to Johnny Antaramian, and we had some good discussions about some of the issues coming up, too. I think that this problem is probably going to be worked on. It's going to be a challenge, though, because you still have to be able to give the ability to the individual citizen and the individual small owner to be able to challenge their assessments. You know, so we're walking a real thin line here when we look at this. So we have to kind of figure that out, how we deal with that issue. Shared revenue, you guys all got your numbers for that, right? For what your shared numbers are. Now we're just waiting for the equalized values. I don't think those are out yet.
No,
I think those are out probably in the next week or so. Those will be out. I think everybody came up a little bit with their shared revenue. I don't know what that percentage is. Kenosha County's $3,044,193 is the number that I have. And then I have the other municipalities, too.
Yeah, our concern, though, is with this next budget, what happens with shared revenue as well.
Well, and I guess...
the counties haven't taken the hit like everyone else has.
No, I understand that. I know that when we look at the shared revenue issue, of course, we're looking at the dollars coming in, it's a guess with where we're going to be. We do know that Medicaid eats up all of our new dollars coming into the state coffers, and it continuously has. So we have to continue to think of ways that we can be more responsible and better stewards of what we're doing at the state level to help you guys become more efficient here too. That's why I think this is good, to have these kinds of exchanges. I will say this, I'm really excited that that Peter is the minority leader. Like I said, a lot of people think that we're at each other's throats and that we hate each other and we don't talk, and that is exactly the opposite. We do talk. I would consider Peter a good friend. We don't agree on a lot of things, okay, but that's okay. We have good dialogues, we get along pretty good, and we can work together on issues. And I think that's what's important. We need to hear both sides of the issues, and I think that good ideas don't come from just one side of the aisle either. You know, so we need to have those good dialogues. And I think for the most part, the legislators from Kenosha, we do talk to each other. We do collaborate on issues. We will work very closely with each other. Bob and I have worked on several bills together. And it's got to be a little challenging for Bob and Peter because they're in the minority. And when you're in the minority, you know, in the past it's always been, well, if they come up with an idea, it's not going anywhere because, of course, the majority might not want to make them look good. You know, that they actually got a bill passed and, you know, got onto the floor. Personally, I don't feel that way, and I've had some of those bills come through to me. And Bob and I worked on one CBD oil. That's coming back, and we are going to get it passed this time. It was 29 senators that were in favor of that. It was on the floor, and it got pulled off the floor because of two senators that didn't like it that were in leadership. And so that was very disappointing. But we've talked about it, and it's going to get past this next session, so we will work on that together, and I think that's a huge issue. Bob came to me, we talked about it, and you know, I told him, I'm not going to be the only author on this. I will co-author this with you because it's a great idea. We need to stand together with this. And he just about fell off the chair. Said, well, that's awesome. You know, why won't you do that? So we're looking at getting stuff done that's going to be helpful to all of our constituents. And I think a lot of people don't understand. We just came through one of the most divisive elections that I can ever remember in my history. And now we need to sit down and get to work and continue the dialogue and work on things together. I mean, you guys are on a county board. That's one thing I kind of liked about being on the county board. It's nonpartisan. It should be nonpartisan. We should be looking to affect whatever changes we can that are going to be positive for everybody that lives in our county and in our districts. I'll have people ask me about issues that are in my district, and I'll tell them right out, you know, the 180,000 people that are in my district, the three assembly districts, I represent those individuals in my district. You know, the 57% that voted for me, and then the rest that didn't vote for me. The election's over. We represent everybody. But more importantly, the 5.7 million people in the state also represent. So I have to take that into consideration too. So for us to have a good dialogue, for me, that is probably the most important thing. When you've got a good transparent process, which you guys are talking about, having a good process that people can weigh in on. I know we had we did that years ago up in Racine, that we wouldn't allow it to come onto the floor if you didn't deal with it. You know, it had to go to the next one, so everybody would get a chance to read it, especially the changes. Because we want to make sure that nobody says that we slipped something through on them. You know, and it gives everybody a chance to ask good questions and be knowledgeable. So I really applaud you guys for looking at process. Process is huge. Process is just absolutely huge because it gives everybody equal opportunity to weigh in on things and have some ownership and be part of that process. I mean, look at Boyd and I. We've been friends for, 20 years, Boyd? Pretty close.
We're young. We're big kids.
And I've tried to convert him several times. You know, I'm working on it. You know, but no, we have good discussions. We do collaborate on issues. We talk about issues. And that's good. You got to have a good, healthy dialogue because I think that helps everybody have a better understanding of how we can eliminate the unintended consequences that are negative, you know, for any one of our constituents. So that's what's really important to me. We selected our leadership. We did that last week. I am the vice caucus chair again, so I'm in leadership. So I will be at a position where I will be working with our leadership to make stuff happen too. I would reach out to every one of the board members that, you know, if you have thoughts or issues that come up that are state issue, don't be afraid to, you know, give us a call. Even though I do not represent the city of Kenosha, that's Bob's area, mine's everything else in Kenosha County, with the exception of, I think, a little bit of Summers. Otherwise, and a little bit of Wheatland. So that's NASA's area. So otherwise, everything rural basically is what I'm representing. So you not only have me as a senator to represent part of the county, you also have Bob too. And Bob and I, like I said, we do collaborate. You know, we do talk about issues together and signed a few letters together with Bob, which never happened before. And so we've worked through that process so that there's a lot of positives that come out of it. So. With that, I'd open it up. If you have specific questions, I'll try to answer them if I can.
Can you explain the CBD oil? Because I know you guys passed something a couple of years ago or whatever, but I heard that it kind of didn't do anything. What?
CBD oil is the oil which is a derivative from the marijuana plant. There is no psychotropic effect from it, so you can't get high on it unless you drank about 100 gallons of it. Then you might, but then it'd cost you about $2 million because a little bit costs you a lot. But it does help alleviate the seizures that, especially in juveniles, juvenile seizures. Some of these kids seizure hundreds and even thousands of times during the day, and this stuff has been found in about 35% of the kids to stop those seizures or reduce them dramatically. Well, there's federal law that you can't transport this stuff across state lines. We have state laws that you can't possess it in the state of Wisconsin because it's still a scheduled drug. So we did change it. We allowed for it to be in the possession of somebody who has a script that is part of a clinical trial here in Wisconsin. And that's the little thing that was added into it, that there'd have to be a clinical trial here. Well, the problem is you do a clinical trial, and clinical trials are very expensive. And of course, you know, like Children's Hospital or Freighter or Milwaukee Medical College, one of those would probably be the ones that would have to do it, and it costs a lot of money, but it would also attach them to marijuana as like a drug type issue with marijuana. Some people, they just don't like to be dealing with those marijuana issues because they figure it's a gateway drug, etc. So the perception, I think, was an issue for some of these big hospitals. They didn't want to get involved in it because, you know, there's some doctors that think that it's more of a placebo, that it doesn't really do anything. But it's been shown that it does for about 35% of the kids that actually have tried it. And on the side, it's not just the juvenile seizures that it stops. They found that it is also something that can reduce or eliminate tremors in Parkinson's. So it's another thing that they're finding with it. So there's some states that are doing clinical trials that have found all kinds of potential uses for this, that where they've had some successes. Now, we didn't have any doctors here in the state of Wisconsin that were working with it, but they are now, and they're working through physicians that are in Colorado as an example, so they are collaborating. So we looked at the law we were going to do would eliminate that if you, as a parent, got it across state lines and were here with it, and were just merely possessing it, you could not be charged with a felony of possession. So we would remove that. So it wouldn't be scheduled in Wisconsin. H.R. 1632, I think it is the federal law that Paul Ryan and the rest of our congressional representatives are working on would eliminate it as a Schedule III drug for the federal law. So you'd be able to actually transport it across the state lines. So that one's being worked on right now as we talk about too. But I think the huge thing was that now we have a whole bunch of doctors that are agreeing with us and that say that, listen, this stuff really works. So I had a discussion with one of the senators that didn't allow this to go through, that was in that went through leadership, and she said that she wants to sit down and talk about this because she's heard a lot more information about it. So I think we're going to be able to work something out that we'll get it passed and we'll be able to actually possess it here in Wisconsin. So that's where we're at now. So we're working on that legislation right now to try to make that so that we can get those couple more senators online here and that we can get some testimony from these medical doctors. Good piece of legislation. Good piece of legislation. And it's one of those pieces of legislation that should absolutely not be a partisan issue. I mean, this is just totally makes sense to do this. And this does not have anything to do with medical marijuana and approving recreational use of marijuana. This would specifically be earmarked for CBD oil and the ability to possess it here in Wisconsin. And we worked with the Attorney General, and he's on board too, so he actually wrote a little portion of our law. So I think we have all the major stakeholders working together on it to get something accomplished.
Interesting.
Other questions, anybody?
Have you, because I asked Senator Lurch the same thing, is there any activity going on that you're aware of to take a look at unfunded mandates that the counties are stuck with that may have been passed a long time ago, not funded, to either repeal them or fund them? Because I don't specifically have them in front of me, but certainly they exist. And
I
it's
don't
one of those
know.
Burdens that once you've moved on from when they get passed, everybody forgets about it until we have to come up with the revenue to support.
I don't know that there is a specific, we're looking specifically for that. I do know in the Assembly, they have been looking at the administrative rules that have been in play for eons with some of the statutes. And the challenge with that is when the legislature passes a law, and let's say it's the Department of Natural Resources that has to administer that law. They say, well, gee, this is going to be a tough one. Well, we really can't administer it the way it's written. So we have to create these administrative rules that will allow us to do that. So basically they make law. When they put these administrative rules in place, they have the effect of law. Before, up until about 4 years ago, they were able to just do that, so each one of these different divisions, DOT or DMV or DNR, they would have the ability to just go in and make their own rules. We passed a law that said that before they could do that, first of all, they had to justify that they needed an administrative rule to administer it, and then why, and then what the administrative rule was going to be, and then that had to be passed to the governor, and he had to approve it. And once he approved it, then it would come to the legislature, and we'd have our kick at the cat, and we would look at it, does it make sense? Are they going too far? Is it what we had intended the law to be, or have they changed the context of how the law is going to be applied? And so that actually was a really good thing. So we're looking closer at those things. But unless we hear about something, and this is one thing that I tell the Racine County Board, too, when I have chats with them, is if they come across something that they think is something that that they're getting jammed up with, that they've been stuck with the cost, and it didn't come to fruition the way that it was originally intended to, you know, it may have been before my time even, you know, being there that these things were passed, and of course they're just eating that expense, they should let us know so we can go back and take a look at it. And even though I don't serve on every committee, we can surely start making phone calls, and we can start asking for inquiries about those statutes and exactly what the funding process was then. And perhaps, and this is what I found a couple times when we've done that, is we found that a lot of times programs will be put into play that are really good at programs. When I was on the county board, first year I was on the county board, and we sat through the first budget process, I pretty much just, I listened, just to kind of get a flow for what was going on. And one thing I found out, we had discretionary dollars that we spent on different programs in the county. And about every 3 years, that program would have to come in, and they would have to kind of do a dog and pony show and show us what they were doing. Are we getting a good return on our investment? You know, are they meeting what their expectations are for their mission statement, et cetera? And then so I just started thinking, so what about these other ones? Well, we just gave them a 2 or 3 or 5% bump every year, whether we knew what they were doing good or not. So this doesn't make sense. And so everybody's kind of says, you know, you're really right. We don't know whether they're actually doing what they said they were going to do or anything. So we changed that up the next year, put everybody on notice. You're now going to have to justify your budget every year. And you're going to have to show us that what you're doing is accomplishing things. And we found out that we had several organizations within a 3 or 4 block area that were basically given the same services at about 20 or 25% effectiveness. And so here we're throwing all that money away when we could be focusing those dollars that are getting, you know, duplicated into other programs that need the money to expand. So what we did is we took money away from some and pushed other dollars into the other ones, and it really worked well because now they had to justify what they were doing. Well, this is kind of what our expectation is too at the state level. We need to be looking at those programs too, because sometimes they get there and they just kind of find their own little space, and it's like everybody puts their blinders on and they don't see what they're doing, and there's no expectation for any results. And you know, personally, I would rather see dollars go into programs that I can see an effect for, that they're actually having an impact and they're doing what they say they're going to do. And you know, a lot of times we look to maybe expand those programs, but we don't have the resources because the resources are being dumped someplace else. And it's not always just about throwing money at it. It's about getting, I think, a public-private partnership involved oftentimes, especially at the county level. We did a lot of that up in Racine when I was on the county board. We would work with organizations, with faith-based organizations to make things happen. So they would get the dollars, but we'd also get the investment of the people. I mean, you could spend a lot of money and get nothing for your money, or you can spend a little money and you get a lot for your money because you have a volunteer. And there's absolutely nothing stronger than the heart of a volunteer. So it multiplies the value of that dollar oftentimes multiple times. So, you know, we need to look at doing more of that, not only as a state, but as a county, as our city municipalities. I think a lot of these organizations have lost their purpose because government has come in and said, geez, we do it better. And then we go on and throw money at it, and we find out that it wasn't better, you know, because we've taken the purpose away from those local organizations that really were the heart of solving some of those local problems. So, you know, just like having these young ladies here for student governance, this is awesome because it gets these kids involved at a level that they'll now have an understanding a little bit better of how their government works. When I knocked on doors to get elected to the county board, knock, 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 hi, I'm Van Wagner, I'm running for the county board supervisor for the district, and the first thing they'd say is, what do you think, is the first thing they'd say. And what is a county board supervisor? What do you do? You know, and then you got to give me, you know, a 2 or 3 minute spiel of what you do. And basically, you're the steward of those state dollars to make things happen in your local communities. And but most of those people had no clue what a county board supervisor even was. And what you do is very, very important for allocating those state dollars and helping us direct money to the right places too. So by all means, don't be afraid to contact my office. My staff will work with you on problems for problem solving. We'll get back to you as quickly as we can, or we'll get you directed to the right place. And sometimes it's, you know, even though I might not chair that committee, you know, sometimes just a little note to the committee chair, or maybe a letter to a department just to ask a few questions, gets a lot of stuff moving, and it can make a lot of differences. And if it's a federal issue, well, I got to say that I'm pretty good friends with the speaker, you know, too. I can shuffle things towards that way too, where they can look at it from the federal level. So by all means, don't be afraid to use that sphere of influence to something positive so we can get stuff done. I think everything's on the table that we can work on.
So that's why I expanded the ambassador program that's done by the county association to individual supervisors working with someone, so that we have that contact, because we're all in this together. You know, party lines don't mean a thing if nothing gets accomplished. Okay. And by the way, Racine County stole our youth and government's program.
They didn't steal it. They used us as an example. And
for the supervisor
it.
That took the program, I'll call it steal. It was Supervisor Osterman.
Oh, Monty, okay. Should be drinking with him, I'm telling you.
Oh, he doesn't speak to me anymore.
So I heard an interesting story today, and you touched on it earlier, Senator, and that is, by all intents and purposes, Amazon has become the largest retailer, okay, in a lot of your big box establishments. I don't care if it's Walmart, Myers, whoever it might be, right, Target, are concerned about it, and they have justifiably good reasons to be that concerned. But then that gets into, you know, sales tax revenue, and then of course property tax, because if your big box establishments are not around, you're not going to be collecting much property tax. So has a discussion, because things are evolving with the internet, right? We live in a different economy, and as a result, revenues and streams of revenues are changing. What kinds of either discussions are taking place at committee level to get ahead of this, because it is shifting? And I know you said, well, we passed the legislation to just collect sales revenue, but a lot of people, that's why they go to the internet, you don't have to pay the sales tax. So maybe you can give any kind of insight on that, because I think that's a trend that's not going to be shifting back.
That's been a discussion that has been ongoing probably since last year, that we've really become aware of some of those issues, especially with the big box, with the ghost story issues, and they want reassessments of their tax liability on their buildings. Like I said, we had some really good discussions about it this past weekend at the Council of Governments meeting we had too, because this was a huge issue for most of the municipalities. It's one of those things where we're going to have the discussion, and I mean, when you can take your phone and you can go on use the Amazon app, and you can go and look for toothbrushes, and it'll come up with every kind of toothbrush you can think of, and oh, that's the one I like. And it compares all the prices. I can get it here for $15 cheaper, and it cost me $5. Okay, so I'm still saving $10. Boop, and it's at my door the next day. This is something that the competition is going to have to deal with, obviously, and I'm not sure how that's going to pan out as far as, you know, sales taxes. There's this movement to eliminate the unfair sales tax law too. I'm not sure where that's going. I personally think that it would be not a good idea to eliminate it totally. Maybe we can look at making some tweaks and some adjustments to it, but I think to just pull out the rug would be the wrong thing to do, because our state's been built on it. From what I've read, the states that don't have it never had it. So they've built their models around everything else, you know, and then everybody's looking at that saying, geez, that's really good, we should do that. Well, we already have our infrastructure in place for the smaller businesses, and I think it would be very detrimental, at least at this point. Discussion we definitely have to have. You know, we have to really start thinking about how we're going to make those types of changes in the future, if they're going to happen at all. But it's definitely a discussion that needs to be done. This is going to be a huge issue with like the Amazon businesses, and they are a huge, huge operation. And they're also making the difference on what the prevailing wage is around here, or what the minimum wage is going to be here. Because they are stealing people from all over the place, because they're paying, what, $15 an hour? $16 an hour is what I hear? Is that about? Yeah. You're shaking it, yes.
My cousin works there.
Any idea what they're getting paid there?
I think she gets paid $15.50 or something like
that. $15.50 an hour. So, I mean, these are entry level and they train them. And I heard that it goes up from about that amount of salary. So I was just talking with some of the other businesses, and they were saying, yeah, we had to raise what we were paying our minimum so that we could be competitive, so they wouldn't steal good people away from us either, you know. So, I mean, that's going to raise the level of pay, I'm sure. But we also have to think about education with our young people so that they get good educations, they have that opportunity, so that we can continue to provide that workforce that we're looking for to expand with our business growth and economic growth here in Kenosha and Racine County. Kenosha is just going like great guns. I mean, look at the businesses that have relocated here just in the last year. I mean, it's phenomenal. You know, and it's because we do have a good work ethic, we have a good workforce, but we need to keep cultivating that so we continue to have that workforce and that they stay here and they don't move someplace else like Minneapolis or Chicago or something like that. So, I mean, it's going to be really challenging, but we need to have that discussion, and I'm hoping that like the board will be involved in that discussion when it starts getting to that level. We're going to need input from all the county boards as to what the impact is going to be to the county, because you are working at that level where every day you're seeing what that impact is, or what the impact isn't, for that matter. You know, so that's going to help us have that insight as to maybe what the best way is to go on a state level. So, and it is different, believe me, it's different from southeastern Wisconsin up to Hudson, you know, or La Crosse. It's really different, you know, with some of the impacts. And I mean, other parts of the states really don't like southeastern Wisconsin sometimes, because we end up generating a lot of the spear of the head programs, you know, where we become the tip of the spear, and it's piloted here because we have the resources, we have the people, we have the thought involved in making a program happen. So it's really, really important that we collaborate. I mean, us as state legislators, that we don't lose the view of where we came from and who we represent too. So that's really important. You know, Mike and I have talked many times about issues, you know, and it's good to have that insight. When you guys see that there's an issue coming up, I mean, I don't have a challenge with somebody giving me a call and say, hey, look at this, can you look into it? And yeah, we'll do that, because I'd rather be ahead of the game than hear about it, you know, on the 6 o'clock news. You know, so if there's things that we can work on, by all means, we need to be able to have that dialogue sooner rather than later.
Now, you know, Wheaton cut all their mental health facilities, and now Racine has had to do something, and we've had to do something. Governor Walker,
Wheaton did what?
The beds that they had, they no longer have the beds over at Wheaton.
The old St. Luke's.
St. Luke's,
yeah. More than half the beds they had.
They had 20 beds there, I think, before, right? So they're down at like 10 now?
Eight.
They had 40, I think, before, wouldn't it?
I know when I was on the county board, we actually did the renovation for the, and we doubled the size. I thought that was 20. Maybe it was 40. Might have gone from 20 to 40, maybe. Now it's down to 8?
Yeah.
So is that Ascension?
Yeah.
Now the one who just took over, they've cut back the mental health? Interesting to know.
And now we'll be doing something over the next year. And Governor Walker made mental health a priority. Do you see that coming to county dollars at all?
Well, I know that I just did legislation which brought a pilot program for mental health to southeastern Wisconsin. We were named as one of those with DHS, so that's currently in the process here. And that was as a result of our pushing for mental health improvements here in Racine and Kenosha. And so they were specifically named as part of the pilot. I know that one of the huge issues that has been an issue my goodness, as far back as I can remember, has been how do we deal with mental health? How do we classify individuals that are, for example, in our county jails that are coming in, because a lot of them are mental health issues. They're not criminal issues. They're issues of not having the right medications or being off their medications or having a mental health issue that caused them to act out that got them into the criminal part of things. So a lot of times those individuals end up locked up in the county jail when they really should be seeing somebody, you know, and I think it's gotten much, much better because the sheriffs in both Racine and Kenosha have quite a few years, about probably 4 or 5 years ago, I think I was still on the county board as a matter of fact, where we started looking at classifying people as they came in, whether they were a criminal issue or it was something that was potentially a mental health issue. And of course, I think at that time, if I'm not mistaken, there was a problem with being able to share information between the hospital and the sheriff's department and the courts because of HIPAA issues. And so we got through that, and now they can share that information with the jail and the court and the hospital. They can all kind of collaborate so that we don't have this loss of information. So that was one big milestone that happened. But it's still a huge issue, and we do not have enough practitioners that understand the mental health issues. My sister-in-law is a psychologist, and she works up in the Racine, Kenosha area. And she says her caseload is just absolutely unbelievable. And there's just not enough practitioners that are getting into the field. And why, I'm really not sure why, because I know that there are courses that are offered, there are certifications that are offered. I don't know if it's a pay issue or if it's just the level of stress that you get when you work in that field. I'm not really sure. So we're still kind of trying to figure that out. But yeah, we're looking at having more access to those mental health facilities. This is the first I heard that they cut their beds back, though, so that's good to know. I will look into that. I will look into that and find out what the skinny is with that. I'm sure that they're trying to cut back on their areas of loss, and this is probably one of those areas, but I know the court were doing Chapter 5115s, and they would have court there on Sundays, actually at Luke's up in Racine, because I think that was Judge Flancher that was overseeing those cases at that time anyway, so I know they were still doing that. Having those 72-hour commitments and all those things were being reviewed on Sundays at the facility, but they've cut back to 8. That I know there's not a loss in, or there hasn't been a reduction in people that need the services. So, any idea why? Did you guys hear anything?
Nothing was in the Journal Times that.
Oh, I didn't catch that one. So, do they have a facility here in Kenosha?
No, they closed it.
So it was closed here in Kenosha also.
We were, when I started with the county, I was primarily doing 51s, and I would say 75% of the cases were folks that were at St. Luke's.
Really?
Now the vast majority of the people that need inpatient or that are taken inpatient are going to Winnebago because it's the only.
Jesus.
There's a handful of Rogers, a few in Milwaukee occasionally, but most of them are Winnebago, which is why we're trying desperately to find diversions to keep people from having to go inpatient.
Well, that was the idea, was to try to keep it locally so that families could be involved and be a participant in the recovery of the individual that has the issues. You know, especially if it's, you know, a lot of times I think it's maintenance of meds and them not taking their scripts, or somebody goes out and acts up and screws up and gets put in jail and they lose their benefits for a period of time if they're locked up for, what, 30 days, I think, or more. And then the jail gives them enough to last them for a week or two coming out, but then they're not eligible until for 30 days of being out, so now they're off their meds again. And it's just like this vicious circle. So I know that, I thought that issue was addressed by most of the jails around the state, but this is the type of issue that you have to deal with. So they're going to Winnebago. Okay, I will look into that also, and I'll give you a heads up for what I find out.
Does anything, because we have 15 minutes before our meeting start, anyone have one last question for the senator? Okay. I will ask you back, after the budget comes out and after the fiscal bureau goes through it. And what we're going to be doing is, last term they brought in everybody at the same time, and that just turned into a partisan fight. So we'll ask everyone to just come in individually. That way we can talk to you on what we see as.
When do you guys do your budget? When is it?
We just got done.
So it's finished now?
Yes.
Okay.
We're all in recovery right now from it.
Well, if you had issues with that, or there were areas that were. Areas that were where you didn't have a good idea what was happening with the state. Let me know what areas those are, and then maybe in the future we can see if we can address some of those issues ahead of time. I mean, waiting for the shared revenue numbers and the assessed values, that's always been, I think, the big issue. It was when I was on the county board, and actually when I got into the legislature, that was one of the things that we wanted to change. Was we got to get this out to these county boards so that, you know, they're not waiting till the day before they're going to do their budgets. You know, we're giving them this information so late in the process. How do you work through something like that when all of a sudden you find, geez, we're going to get 50 grand less, you know, or some huge number that's going to really impact, you know, what you're trying to do at the county level. So, and then I would just ask if you do have areas that are areas that you know of that we should look at that are unfunded mandate areas. Make up a grocery list. Let me know what that is, and we'll look into it, because it's going to start to get to be our busy time with budgeting coming up. But you know, we can take a peek at that and write a few make a few inquiries to find out too where we're at with some of all those issues. Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate
Thank you.
It.
Thanks for coming.
I appreciate it, and I'll leave a card for everybody too, so we have all the office contact information.
Second.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.